Let's pray. Hey, what's your song? Okay. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this evening, for this wonderful weather, for the time of opening our Bibles, and hopefully meeting you, learning about you, your ways, seeing how you work in the lives of your people, how you form character. And Lord, if we're honest, none of us likes difficulty and trials and whatnot. But we know that they're necessary. We know that you use them to form character, to draw us closer to you, to make us more dependent upon you. And so we look to you this evening. And as always, I pray that you would speak through all of us. Teach us, we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay. David is now king of what?
Judah.
Yeah. Not quite all of Israel. Okay. But let's just turn to Psalm 78 real quick. Get a perspective on David's life up to this point. I'm a lovely reader, Marie, verses 70 to 72.
He chose David his servant and took him from the sheepfolds, from following the nursing ewes he brought him to shepherd Jacob his people. Israel, his inheritance. With upright heart, he shepherded them and guided them with his skillful hand.
Okay. Now, what does this give us some perspective about David's life? Well, first thing I want to see is that he chose David his servant. We believe that he was 17 years old. And this is why this applies to, for example, if you go back to all your interviews of pastors, the deciding factor really is the calling of God, and it'll be made abundantly clear. I don't know who else you brought in, but I was told that before me, a person was brought in and they didn't have control of their family, the children. And that was not a good sign. It just didn't look as a good fit. And then it was just the opposite with us. And it was a sense that this is with the Lord and whatnot. So it was a confirmation, but there was a choosing. You want to do the will of God. And it was David who was chosen. Okay? And we think that he was about 17 years old at this time. And if he was 17 years old, that means that he's 30 years old when he just became king of Judah. So he was about 13 years. He was in a various trials. Okay? And we know what those are. For 13 years. So there's some serious character development going on, right? Where did he take him from?
Sheepfolds.
Yeah, he took him from the sheepfolds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what does that imply? We ever take care of sheep? What?
It's
near the bottom.
It's the bottom.
Yeah. Saw a video of a goat or some sheep. They got stuck in some mud. And this lady had to she was working to get it out, pull it out. And the mud was so thick and that it had weakened. Let's go to the sheep. And she had to drag it out. And it took a lot of effort. And she had to drag it in the water, and she had to then keep it down from it and work the water in the mud to get it off the coat of the animal. And it just took time. She had to drag it out of the water, and there it was laying down, and eventually it gained the strength to stand up on its own. Okay? Now, that was just for one of them. And so that's one of the things that you learn when you are serving, that you're serving and you're doing these things for these stupid animals. you know, in hopes of getting, eventually eating the animal for food, but also using a coat and making your living and whatnot. We know that they require a lot of work, sheep. They constantly need to be led and watched over and protected. And so it's great leadership training, because you are constantly giving of yourself, you're constantly watching over the flock, you're protecting them from predators, you are providing for them, leading them to, you have to lead them to, you know, fields where there's plenty of grass, and you have to lead them to still waters. You can't lead them to rushing waters because they're so blind and dumb. They'll walk right in and be drowned. And so, over and over and over. So it's a thankless job, but you are of a humble servant attitude, and that's one of the things that we see with David that we quite frankly just did not see in Saul, did we? Was he a shepherd, by the way? I don't even remember. What did Saul do? He just was chosen, right?
He was handsome and tall.
Okay. He was
looking for
donkeys or mules.
Now, it says he brought him to shepherd Jacob and his people. That didn't happen when he was 17. When did God say, okay, I can now entrust you with this? How old was he? You think he was about, the text says he was 3 years old. So he had 13 years of training. But the most important thing is verse 72, is how he shepherded them. According to the integrity of his heart, and guided them with skillful hands. What does that mean, the integrity of his heart? It means that he was a complete man. It means that he's not double-minded, like a bipolar type person. Okay, so he was, and if he felt the passionate wrath, he would slay Nabal, and yet he was humble enough to listen to Abigail. He knew that he was to love all his enemies, and he lived that out, even at great personal cost to him. Okay? So he was a complete man in that way. But integrity is not just keeping your word. It means that you are, again, it's like the hull of a submarine. It has integrity. It won't collapse under great pressure. So it's complete. Okay. But also, through that time, David learned to guide them, it says, with his skillful hands. In other words, he learned to play the political game. Remember that? He learned all of that. So that would help him to guide the nation. And that's what he did at the age of 30 until he died, I think at the age of 70, so for 40 years as he reigned as king. Okay. Now we're going to enter into him shepherding the actual people. Go to 2 Samuel. And by the way, as you get your train to 2 Samuel, it's important for us to know this. For those 13 years, what did David learn from God that would help him become king?
Trust only in God for God is his only source. Mm-hmm. Everything else is stripped away.
Trust God. Yep. What else? This is the first one should be pretty obvious if you think about it.
Who's your enemies?
Okay.
You learn that.
Okay. How about patience? Mm. 17 years old, you're going to be king. 13 years later, it begins. It's not fully, but it begins to be fulfilled. He waited for 13 years. So he learned patience, endurance, long suffering. He learned to wait on God. How many times did he have the opportunity to what appeared to be God delivering his enemy in his hands, and he would not strike down his enemy?
Twice.
At least twice. It's recorded. Yeah. He learned to trust in God. When he didn't trust in God, he got in trouble. When he did, God was faithful. I think he also learned one other thing during this time, and during these 13 years. I think he learned contentment. To be wherever he is in his life, whatever circumstance, he was learned to, I will trust the Lord, I will be content where I am, and I trust that God will bring about his promise. So can anyone give an example from their own life of when you've waited on the Lord, were patient and trusted him, and he brought about and maybe an answer to prayer or a promise he kept to you or made to you? Anyone want to share anything about that?
I've been trying to get a promotion for 7 years.
That's true. That's true. And they keep changing the rules.
New managers along the way.
Batteries.
Just never ends.
Yeah.
And numerous times, but I'm drawing a blank country on you.
During all that time that David was waiting, what could he look back on to give him, to nurture his contentment and his patience? Trust.
I think that what promises God gave him. God gave him.
But what were they? You had a pretty detailed look at his life. What were they?
That he would be king.
Okay. One very obvious one that I think he would remember throughout his life.
Saul had many opportunities to actually kill him, but he never got killed.
He trusted that God would empower him to kill Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's true. Yeah.
And he prepared him by saying, listen, I've killed a lion and a bear. It's just a man. God will not take this. He will, but we'll be victorious. And so that was one of the things.
He was confident.
He had seen God frustrate his enemy. How did he do that? Well, he's being pursued by Saul. It was one example where God frustrated, in a funny way, by the way, God frustrated his enemy in pursuit of him.
So Saul had to disband from his pursuits of David to go take care of some invaders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was when he was going around the mountain. Was that mountain of escape? I don't know.
There's another example, Keith.
Oh, now they're prophesying?
Yep. Send him. He's with Samuel. So they send these men to Samuel. What happens?
Start prophesying.
They don't get there. On their way, they will have what? The school of prophets, and they just all fall down and prophesy. He sends another delegation. That's where Saul goes himself. He's knocked out. Okay, you don't think David is seeing this and hearing this? Okay. I mean, he says God has protected him. He's his refuge, his strength. You know. All of that. And he would see God provide for him during all this time as well. So, let's talk about now. He's entering into a different phase of life now. He's no longer, I mean, imagine this. He is no longer being pursued by Saul, and he can now freely, for the most part, roam about his native land.
Judah.
Yeah. But even in all Israel as well. But I mean, he's no longer being pursued by the king of the Jews, because he's now the king. And you're going to experience all of it in its fullness later on. But what a shift in thinking. He's always had to run and hide. Now he can sit there and park a tent wherever he wants to and stay there for an experience or a good length of time, whereas he was moving constantly because he's always being pursued. Cave to cave, perhaps night after night, a different place for times. Okay, so verses 1 through 11, the confrontation between Abner and Ish-bosheth.
There was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. And David grew stronger and stronger, while the house of Saul became weaker and weaker. And sons were born to David in Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon of Ahinoam of Jezreel, and his second, Chileab of Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel, and the third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur, and the fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith, and the fifth, Shephatiah, the son of Abital, sixth, Ithream of Eglah, David's wife. These were born to David in Hebron. While there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, Abner was making himself strong in the house of Saul. Now Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah. And Ish-bosheth said to Abner, "Why have you gone into my father's concubine?" Then Abner was very angry over the words of Ish-bosheth and said, "Am I a dog's head of Judah? To this day I keep showing steadfast love to the house of Saul your father, to his brothers, and to his friends, and have not given you into the hand of David. And yet you charge me today with a fault concerning a woman. God do so to Abner and more also, if I do not accomplish for David what the Lord has sworn to him, and to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah, from Dan to Beersheba." And Ish-bosheth could not answer Abner another word because he feared him.
Okay. Let me give you some background here. I'm going to write this down again. The name Chileab, see that? Let's go back there. These are the sons that were born to Hebron. The first one was Ammon. And of course, what about him? What did he do? You remember?
It says here he raped and defiled his half-sister Tamar later.
Yep.
By the command of Absalom, was killed for his crime.
Okay. How about second, Chileab? You know what that means? Mm-hmm. It means like his father.
Oh, dear. That can't be good.
No, in appearance.
Just kidding.
In appearance, he looked like David, so he was ruddy and handsome. Okay? And Chile was obviously from the mother was Abigail. See that? Absalom, what would he do? Yeah, try to take the kingdom from him, okay?
He got one up on his hair as well.
Okay, I have a note in here. I'm trying to figure this out. It says here that some Chileab, he apparently died before he was able to enter into position to contend for the throne, for nothing more is said about him. This child was born to David by the wife of whom David had taken upon the death of Nabal. Now there's some speculation that his name was Daniel. And it says that, and that means God has judged me. And that means that some believe that David's enemy, said Daniel, who was really Chileab, was Nabal's son. That Abigail was pregnant when David when they married. And so it was a way of saying that he was illegitimate, a way of attacking David. Okay? Here, David, in this time frame, is it's about 7 years. He's 30 to 37 years old, that time frame. Here are the children that were born in Hebron. We can see them in 2 Samuel 3, 2 through 5, chapter 3, verses 13 and 14, chapter 13, verse 1, 1 Chronicles 3, verses 1 through 4. So the wives of David and children were born in Hebron and Jerusalem. Here's Ahinoam, Ammon, Abigail, Chileab, Maacah had Absalom and Tamar. Haggith had Adonijah, Abigail and Shephatah, you know these names. Eglah, Ithream, and Michael was Barak. Who was Michael?
First wife.
Right. Okay. Now, the question is, was it biblical to have that many wives? This is what Reeves wanted to know early on, and I didn't answer it, so we'll get to it, and he never stopped coming. So, turn to Deuteronomy 17, 17. Two wives.
I have to look at the Hebrew.
It's kind of obscure in this
translation. Well, my point being that what was the design? You interpret that, these verses?
One man.
Okay, but he also allowed, though, you know, Abraham had what, one wife?
But it never turned out well.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always.
How many wives did Jacob have? Okay, and you get the idea here. And
conflict.
Right.
Every time.
But he did allow.
Right.
For the time being. How many wives did Moses have? Mm. Two or three. Mm. Okay. Now, the point being is that the first thing would be, why would he allow? You know, his perfect intent was one man, one woman. Why would he allow not many, but more than one wife?
Pretty sure.
I agree. I actually agree.
What would be another reason?
Procreation.
What else? I think biblically. What's important, heirs. If, you know, the Sadducees, a man dies.
Mm. Oh, because it would be the kinsman redeemer.
Yeah, and so like, then it's a responsibility to produce an heir, and then it goes to the brother, he dies. The point being is that, not only that, to keep the land and the rights and the wealth within each family, plus each family, but also the fact that if one wife was barren, another one too, and they weren't going into marketing or IT. What were they doing, these children? From a very young age, by the way. They're working the land. There wasn't a store to go to. They needed it to shepherd sheep, to plow, and to reap, and to sow, and all of that. I mean, it's so funny because there are missionaries, and it just wears on them. I remember the missionary couple for years served in Indonesia, and she would have to go to the market every day, and there'd be like part of chicken, you had to feather it and all that, and prepare it. The meal was it was hours for one meal. Okay. And so, and he allowed that. But his intent from the very beginning was, one man and one woman. Okay. Now, let me give you some other information here. So that was the children born in Hebron, and there was, say, from this list here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 children. Okay? And that children, of course, are what? A blessing. They're a blessing. Okay? Now, that was him from the ages of 30 to 37. Now, David from the ages of 37 to 70 years. Okay? So over a 33-year period. Here's the children that were born to him in Jerusalem. You can read this in 2 Samuel 5, 14 through 16, 1 Chronicles 3, 5 through 8, and 2 Chronicles 11, 18. Of course, there was Bathsheba. How many children did she give him? Well, 4. Shimea, Shobab, Nathan, and Solomon. There are unnamed wives, okay? Plural, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 more children. Ippor, Lishu, Lipdad, Nagab, they just keep going on and on and on. So, David was a man who loved God, and he obviously loved women. So he had all these wives, and of course, that, which was in his DNA, by the way, was clearly passed on to his sons, particularly Solomon. Okay? And so, yeah. So there's a confrontation. So the total size of David's family, this is fascinating. 20 sons and one daughter. So let's have the family over for dinner.
Like that many for as many wives as he ended up having.
Well, he had all his wives to cook the meals, get the bread ready, right? Like, can you imagine him arguing all those wives in there?
No.
All, you know, he likes it this way. No, he wants it this way. No, my child likes this. You're serving your child more than you're giving my child. You know?
Looking for the nearest rooftop.
That's right.
The corner of the rooftop.
Copy number two.
And so that's that. Now, there's a war between the house of Saul and the house of David. And obviously, God is strengthening the house of David and weakening the house of Saul. Mm-hmm. We believe that it was at least 2, if not longer, years before that war would end. So David, not only he's 30 years old, but by the time he's 33, he's able to take the rest of, well, this war ends at least, and he can, you know, then move in and become king over all of Israel. Okay, and then the completion of the promise of God. Okay. Obviously, Saul had a concubine. Okay, we know what that means. And Ishbosheth sees what Abner is doing, restricts himself in the house of Saul, and then he makes a crucial mistake. He criticizes, shall we say, the strongest in his house. Okay, and of course, Abner gets offended. And yeah, now what do we see here from Abner? Because, the question that we're now going to wrestle with, okay, and I think you ought to write this down. David has been under, he's waiting, he's still in a trial. He's been suffering, he's been patience, and it's this time of circumstances that are forming his character. And he's living in a time of adversity for a long time. Now, all of a sudden, we have to see if David can handle success and prosperity. Okay? Like he handled adversity. And how did he handle adversity? He was patient. He trusted God. He was humble. was content. He waited on all those things, okay? Didn't hold a grudge. Now what do we see comes on with Abner in this situation? He was wrong in what he was doing. He was called out, and how did he respond?
Can he yield the kingdom over to, or see to it that David will be enthroned over the whole kingdom?
And that basically proud men, they cannot bear correction. Right? This is revealing about Abner as well. His actions and his words, particularly his words, reveal he knew who was to be king, right? David. And he, being a general and a smart man in a strategy, would see that David was strengthening and the house of Saul was weakening. But he opposes the will of God under a principle of ambition. As long as he is moving up the house of Saul, he will oppose what he already knows is the will of God. David is going to be king. But he complies to the will of God under a principle of revenge. See that? Does that make sense? As long as you don't call me out my sin, I am okay with not doing the will of God and strengthening the house of Saul. Once you call me on my sin, I get offended, I'm going to get even with you. I'm going to submit to the will of God, and I will turn you over to the house of David. You ever act that way? As long as it's convenient for you, you'll do something you know is wrong. But when it becomes inconvenient, you get offended, you go, I'm not motivated now to do what's right. And we'll see how God uses Abner. Okay, verses 12 through 21.
And Abner sent messengers to David on his behalf, saying, to whom does the land belong? Make your covenant with me, and behold, my hand shall be with you to bring over all Israel to you. And he said, good, I will make a covenant with you. But one thing I require of you, that is, you shall not see my face unless you first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see my face. Then David sent messengers to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, saying, give me my wife Michal, for whom I paid the bridal price of 100 foreskins of the Philistines. And Ishbosheth said, and took her from her husband Paltiel, the son of Laish. But her husband went with her, weeping after her, all the way to Bahurim. Then Abner said to him, go, return. And he returned. And Abner conferred with the elders of Israel, saying, For some time past you have been seeking David as king over you. Now then, bring it about, for the Lord has promised David, saying, by the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines, and from the hand of all their enemies. Abner also spoke to Benjamin, and then Abner went to tell David at Hebron all that Israel and the whole house of Benjamin thought good to do. When Abner came with 20 men to David at Hebron, David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. And Abner said to David, I will arise and go and will gather all Israel to my lord the king, that they may make a covenant with you, and that you may reign over all that your heart desires. So David sent Abner away, and he went in peace.
So what's happening here?
An alliance.
What else? Go deeper. Motivations, attitudes. Who is he sworn to? Abner's from what house?
Saul.
And now what's he doing now?
He's swearing allegiance to David.
Why?
Well, it's advantageous.
Yeah, he was what? Offended. He was offended. He was called out. Finished bullshit. So Abner's a pretty petty individual, isn't he?
Yes.
If we don't hear, it says that Enemies can sometimes be made a footstool upon which to be stepped upon, but as well they can be used to ascend to a higher position. And obviously verse 16 says, let no man set his heart on that which he is not entitled to. Feel bad for the husband, don't you?
Yes.
What does it tell you about the view of women back then, by the way?
They were shadow.
They were what?
Shadow.
Shadow? Property?
Property.
Okay. And they had obviously moved so far away from the original plan of God. Notice that we don't see a feminist movement here, do we? None of that, okay? It's definitely a patriarchal society that's obviously not living up to God's standard. Okay, verses 22 through 30, the death of Abner.
Just then the servants of David arrived with Joab from a raid, bringing much spoil with them. But Abner was not with David at Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he had gone in peace. When Joab and all the army that was with him came, it was told Joab, Abner the son of Ner came to the king, and he has let him go, and he has gone in peace. Then Joab went to the king and said, what have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why is it that you have sent him away so that he is gone? You know that Abner the son of Ner came to deceive you and to know your going out and your coming in, and to know all that you are doing. When Joab came out from David's presence, he sent messengers after Abner, and they brought him back from the cistern of Sirah, but David did not know about it. And when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside into the midst of the gate to speak with him privately. And there he struck him in the stomach, so that he died. For the blood of Asahel, his brother, so that he died for the blood of Asahel, his brother. Afterward, when David heard of it, he said, I and my kingdom are forever guiltless before the Lord for the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. May it fall upon the head of Joab and upon all his father's house, and may the house of Joab never be without one who has a discharge or who is leprous or who holds a spindle or who falls by the sword or who lacks bread. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner, because he had put their brother Asahel to death in the battle of Gibeon.
Trouble in David's kingdom, huh? Any thoughts?
Well, it said that Abner died with being impaled in the gut, mm-hmm. like Joab's brother was, because Abner killed him when he was being pursued.
You see the irony here? Joab accused Abner of deception, spying on David. In verse 26, he deceived David by not telling him that his request of Abner returned to Hebron. He used this deception to slay Abner out of personal vengeance for the death of his brother Asa. Okay. Some notes here. It says that God will not so use a man as evil or bad as Abner in such good works as uniting Israel. What was so bad about what Job did? Well, he had unjust pretense. Joab murdered in peacetime. Abner murdered in war. There was jealousy. Abner wanted to be the commanding officer. There was treacherous actions. There was murder under peaceful arrangements. It displeased David. He openly killed without shame. Hebron was a Levite city and a city of refuge. What does that mean?
There were cities that you could flee to,
yeah,
to escape if you had killed someone unintentionally.
Right.
And avoid revenge.
So it was a place of faith and peace, not a place of judgment. Okay? Verses 31 to 39. Again, the heart of David starts coming out.
Then David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, "Tear your clothes and put on sackcloth and mourn before Abner." And King David followed the bier. They buried Abner in Hebron, and the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. And the king lamented for Abner, saying, "Should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound, your feet were not fettered, and all the people, as one falls before the wicked, you have fallen." And all the people wept again over him. Then all the people came to persuade David to eat bread while it was yet day. But David swore, saying, "God do so to me, and more also, if I taste bread or anything else till the sun goes down." And all the people took notice of it, and it pleased them, as everything that the king did pleased all the people. So all the people and all Israel understood that day that it had not been the king's will to put Abner, the son of, to put to death Abner the son of Ner. And the king said to his servants, "Do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel? And I was gentle today, though anointed king. These men, the sons of Zariah, are more severe than I. The Lord repay the evildoer according to his wickedness."
Questions about that? Your thoughts on that? I would just say this and we'll end because we're out of time. David is very godlike. And by this I mean, God doesn't desire that any man or woman or child perish. And this we see an example of that. Here's somebody that perished, that, you know. And, you know, God he laments when there are people that die apart from knowing him. And this is why David was a man after God's own heart. One of the reasons. So he's mourned for his enemies. He's mourned for also Saul. You expect him to mourn for Jonathan, right? Mm-hmm. And now he's mourning for Abner. It doesn't make sense, does it?
Abner was in pursuit of him.
Yeah.
Under the reign of Saul.
What do you think the people were following him, what were they thinking? Watching David mourn for his enemies.
Some will be confused.
Yeah. You know what that is? That is the love that is beyond understanding. And that is why whenever someone has a problem with me, particularly in a church setting, where we as leadership have done something, one of the first things I say to them, you know, or I tell the elders, or I say to people, "How can we help you? How can we get you out of this state of offense you're in?" Because I don't want them in that. I'm so grateful that God is so quick. He's slow to anger. He is quick to forgive. And he's been the way from the very beginning. Because it was the first thing he did after the sin of Eve and then Adam.
The first thing he did?
He covered their sin.
Yeah.
He went to them. He provided a sacrifice. He would have been known as, from the very beginning, God is quick to forgive and to cover sin and provides a way.
I thought the first thing he did was pronounce judgment on all three parties that were involved.
But yeah, he still would have been known by a just, but also one, I'm going to forgive your sin, and I'm going to cover your sin. And that's, of course, what he did with the blood of his son. So.
I always remember the verses as it go, that he takes no pleasure in the destruction of the wicked.
Yeah.
That is, I don't remember where I read that. It's how that is in me as well.
Any other questions? So what did you learn tonight?
That you always come prepared.
What?
I said that you always come prepared.
I did this. This is from years ago.
Yeah, but I didn't come prepared at all. I didn't read this today.
We just told me to go through it. Huh? We go through it, you know, section by section. I ask questions from here. I ask questions from the come to me in the moment. And you know you learned something from today in this chapter 20, or chapter 3. Anything?
David made a good friend.
Okay.
Godly.
Okay.
I'm following the world.
Yeah. Makes you think twice about, and even fellow Christians that sort of, you know, want justice or want, you know, want an eye for an eye, essentially. And that is not really what we should be. We should be mourning, is, you know, instead of saying, well, that isn't fair, and, you know.
Mm-hmm. He didn't hold grudges.
He didn't hold grudges.
He didn't hold grudges. He was quick to forgive. About my own family, we've got some hard-hearted, unforgiving. He's one of my immediate family, and it's kind of a...
Do I need to have a counseling session with Frank?
Well, it has to do mostly with our nephews.
Begin to see why David was a man after your own heart. And we asked that he would make us that way as well. Fill us with your spirit that we may be rooted and grounded in love. And out of that foundation of love, respond in love in every situation. Quick to forgive, slow to anger. Praying and mourning over our enemies.